Chapter 10. Obra Dagar's Simulator Palace, Coruscant.
There weren't many places, Moff Drickle Lesserson reflected, where an aging man, far older than any active-duty starfighter pilot, could dress up in the uniform of a TIE fighter pilot with a unit designation 40 years out of date and attract absolutely no attention. Obra Dagar's Simulator Palace was one such place. Lesserson, clad head to foot in that black uniform, wearing the unit patch of one of the squadrons that so famously and unsuccessfully defended the original Death Star in the Yavin system before most of the palace's patrons were born, walked the aisles of this curious establishment, and nobody gave him a second look. The forbidding but anonymous helmet he wore concealed the gray hair, fierce bristly mustache, and military manner made famous by his many appearances on Holonews broadcasts and addresses to those he governed within the Imperial Remnant. The palace's main room and many of the branching side rooms were, of course, dominated by gleaming banks of the highest quality civilian-grade flight simulators. The carapaces enclosed cockpits featuring state-of-the-art vid screens and sound systems. Their bases and ceilings were implanted with acceleration-deceleration simulators similar in design to the inertial compensators found in starfighters. Slide into a cockpit, issue a verbal command indicating which vehicle was to be simulated and which mission was to be flown, and the simulator would do the rest, reconfiguring the cockpit components and throwing up video images appropriate to those choices. Elsewhere in the establishment, a patron could find room-sized simulators rented by teams that replicated the interiors of capital ship bridges and famous fleet actions. Obra Dagar's went a step beyond many similar businesses by encouraging costumes. So long as the uniform a customer wore was either from a decommissioned service or was more than 20 years out of date, it was permissible. So, in addition to tourists in glaringly mismatched colors or anonymous travelers' robes and university students in whatever style had been predetermined to represent rebellion and individuality on a universal basis this season, there were customers in the uniforms of pilots, ship officers, and infantry of the Empire, the Rebel Alliance, the Old Republic, the Alderaan Royal Guards. Lesserson continued to be amazed at the variety of styles and the attention to detail that went into some of them. He turned left down a side corridor. Five paces behind, two similarly anonymous TIE fighter pilots, not obviously accompanying him, followed. A few steps more, and Lesserson reached a door flanked by potted plants and a handful of costumed ersatz pilots standing in a group and talking in low tones. Not obviously blocking access to the door, but doing so from any perspective of practicality. These men and women glanced at him, and one woman looked down at a data pad in her hand. This one designed to receive a transceiver signal from a device Lesserson carried. The signals they exchanged were apparently correct. The pilot, dressed in a 60-year-old style from Naboo, nodded and stepped aside. Lesserson brushed past her. The door opened and he went through, emerging into a small private cantina, heavy with plants in the sort of long, thin boxes that were normally placed just outside viewports. The lights overhead were bright, the wood lining the walls dark. Lesserson's escorts did not enter with him, and the door slid shut. Lesserson removed his helmet, glad to have moving air on his face again. The others were already waiting for him. Senator Haydnet Treen of Kuat, her years not diminishing her alert eyes or perfect posture, wore a uniform matching that of the datapad sentry outside. On the card table beside her rested the antiquated helmet of a Naboo pilot. Her gray hair, though immaculately styled, bore the unmistakable signs of having been mashed by the helmet and then teased back into a semblance of its correct shape.